Have you ever, looked at a ballot paper standing there in that tiny little cardboard voting booth and thought, I really love this one party's environmental policy, but honestly, I much prefer that other party's economic
Oh,
plan?
absolutely, all the time.
Right. You were just holding this pen, staring at a rigid piece of paper, and you were basically forced to just pick a team.
Yeah, it feels incredibly limiting.
It really does. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
We are looking at a stack of really fascinating research papers and articles today, mostly from Swedish and German political analysts.
Yeah, and they're digging into why modern democracies are suddenly taking like months to form functioning governments.
What if that rigid piece of paper is actually the reason our modern governments just keep freezing up?
And honestly, it is arguably the most critical democratic question right now because all over the world, governments are experiencing these severe structural gridlocks.
Which is terrifying if you think about it.
Completely. And the research paper we are diving into today explores whether highly advanced voting options, specifically tools called panachage and cumulative voting, could actually be the ultimate cure for these political standoffs.
Okay, so to set the baseline for you listening, the global problem here is that government formation is taking way longer and getting significantly uglier.
Right, exactly. We aren't talking about, a few weeks of tense negotiations over coffee. Back in 2017, Germany went 171 days without a government.
Wait, almost half a year? How does a country even function for half a year without a completely formed government?
Yeah.
Who is making the long-term decisions?
Well, essentially nobody. You just have these caretaker administrations sort of keeping the lights on. And it isn't an isolated incident either.
Right.
Sweden faced massive parliamentary crises in 2014, and we see similar institutional paralysis repeatedly popping up in places like Austria, Denmark, Finland, Norway, and France.
That level of paralysis is just wild to me. And before we really get into the weeds of this paper and how to fix it, I should probably add a quick note for you listening.
Yeah, good idea.
Today, we're looking at real-world data involving left-wing, right-wing, and populist parties all across Europe. But to be completely clear, our mission today isn't to play politics or pick sides.
Not at all.
We are simply popping the hood on the mechanics of democracy to see what the math actually tells us. We aren't endorsing any specific platforms.
Right. We are entirely focused on the structural mechanics of the ballot box. We just want to understand how the rules of the game dictate the outcome of the game.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the fundamental mismatch identified in this research is so fascinating to me. The problem isn't necessarily the politicians themselves or, that humans are suddenly worse at cooperating.
No, it's that our voting systems haven't changed in decades, but you and I, the modern voters, have changed entirely.
Right. We have undergone this massive generational shift in political identity.
Exactly. If you look back to the 1970s, the paper describes this as the era of the loyal lifetime voter. Back then, society was largely divided into these rigid, highly predictable groups.
Like you were born into a voting block.
Pretty much. Take a mine worker in Germany, for example. He voted for the Social Democrats. End of story. His union voted that way, his friends voted that way.
Or like a Catholic forester voting for the conservatives, or a corporate lawyer voting for the liberal.
Exactly. You could essentially predict a voting bloc based purely on profession, religion, and geography. You picked your party and you stuck with it.
It was basically like inheriting a sports team from your parents. You just didn't switch allegiances, The team was your identity.
But today, that concept of the loyal lifetime voter is largely dead. Individualization has completely fractured those old groups.
So today we're going to explore why the traditional voter like, the one politicians are used to, no longer exists.
Yeah, and how our current voting systems are fundamentally mismatched to modern behavior. We'll also get into this proven sort of Swiss Army knife approach to the ballot that could potentially kill political gridlock for good.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Because reading through these sources, the core problem reminds me of, picture trying to order a pizza for a really large group of friends using this incredibly rigid delivery app.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Right, like the app only lets you click all meat or all veggie, but you look around the room and everyone actually wants a half and half, or maybe they want pepperoni, but, with a few green peppers on the
Yeah,
side.
they want nuance.
Exactly. But the system forces you to choose a rigid absolute. And that just doesn't match the nuanced reality of what the people in the room actually want to eat.
Yeah, the menu hasn't changed, but the appetites and like the dietary requirements of the diners have transformed completely over the last few decades. Research points out that individualization, The decline of strict class structures, and obviously the rise of issue-based social media, have completely fractured those rigid milieus.
They're just gone.
Pretty much. We are now seeing the dominance of what they call Wahlstrom voter streams and Vexelvaler.
Vexelvaler, which right. are like swing voters or ticket splitters, right?
Exactly.
And the data highlighting this shift is just staggering. There's this one study from the Swedish broadcaster SVT tracking voter loyalty, and it absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, the 2018 to 2022 data?
Yes. They tracked voters over just 4 years between those two elections. Only 31% of Sweden's center party voters stayed loyal to them.
Wow.
Right. More than half their base just went somewhere else entirely.
Yeah.
And for the liberals, it was a mere 35%.
Yeah. People are treating political parties more like Uber drivers. You use them for a specific trip to get to a specific destination, but you aren't marrying the driver.
That is a great way to put it. You aren't marrying them.
The modern electorate is incredibly fluid. People make up their minds days, sometimes even hours, before an election. They might care deeply about climate policy on a Tuesday, but prioritize economic stability on a Thursday.
Right, and they're willing to jump across those traditional party lines to vote on specific issues rather than that lifelong tribal loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
But hold on, if voters are more flexible and open-minded now, shouldn't compromise actually be easier?
You would think so, yeah.
Right. If the public is pragmatic enough to jump between parties, why is that flexibility causing a 171-day traffic jam in Germany or freezing up Sweden back in 2014, like the sources mentioned?
Well, what's fascinating here is the massive disconnect between the citizen and the actual architecture of the state.
The voting system itself.
Exactly. The voters have become highly flexible, yes, but the politicians and the voting systems themselves have remained entirely rigid.
Ah, I see.
The system is still built for that 1970s coal miner. It forces a fluid, nuanced electorate into strict adversarial bloc politics.
So you have a population begging for pragmatic nuance, but they're forced to choose between rigid, prepackaged blocks.
Right, and that friction is exactly what creates the massive bottleneck we see today.
So if the system is the problem, why don't countries just overhaul how they vote?
Well, they try, or at least they debate it constantly. The sources dive into this massive tug of war between the two heavyweights of democracy, majoritarian voting and proportional voting.
It honestly feels like every country is just looking over the fence, convinced the grass is greener on the other side.
It really is the defining debate in modern political science. To grasp the frustration in these sources, we have to look at how both of these systems attempt and fail to capture the modern voter.
Okay, so let's break them down. A majoritarian system, like you see in the U.S. or the U.K., is winner-take-all. The candidate with the most votes in a district wins the only seat.
Right, which mathematically trends toward creating two massive dominant parties.
Which gives you clear winners and stable governments, but, like, at a huge cost.
Exactly. And then you have a proportional system, which awards seats in parliament to parties based exactly on their share of the national vote.
So if your party gets 12% of the vote nationwide, you get roughly 12% of the seats.
Yes. This creates diverse multi-party parliaments, but it also means no one ever really wins an outright majority. They are forced to form coalitions.
And the sources show how desperately countries are trying to escape the flaws of whatever system they happen to have. Like in Sweden, which uses a proportional system, the political landscape basically devolved into two completely rigid warring blocks anyway.
Yeah, it got so bad that former Prime Minister Ingvar Carlsson actually suggested they should just abandon it and move to a majoritarian system to force clear two-party stability.
But there is immense pushback against that idea in the Swedish source. Political scientist Ulf Gerald warns that crushing a diverse, multi-party society down into just two majoritarian buckets would silence minority voices entirely.
Right. When voters feel their specific, nuanced views are swallowed up by a massive two-party duopoly, it deeply damages the public's core trust in democracy.
But then you look at France. They have a majoritarian-style system, and they are having the exact opposite conversation.
Yeah, the grass is always greener.
Literally. Political scientist Helene Miard-Delacroix points out that their winner-take-all system has created incredibly hostile, confrontational blocks. The left, the center, the right, they operate in a culture of pure winners and losers.
If you win 51% of the vote, you wield 100% of the power. So there is zero incentive to compromise.
Right. And she suggests that moving toward a proportional system might be the only way to force these hostile camps to sit down, form coalitions, and offer voters better representation.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it becomes overwhelmingly clear that simply flipping between these two extremes is just a fool's errand.
Neither one actually works for what we need now.
Exactly. Neither the traditional majoritarian nor the traditional proportional system captures the complexity of that modern, flexible swing voter we talked about.
Because you can't fix a three-dimensional problem with a two-dimensional ballot.
Exactly. We don't need to throw out the whole system. The researchers suggest we just need to add a third dimension to the ballot itself.
Okay, so how do we do that? The researchers point to a country that bypassed this binary trap entirely. Switzerland.
Right, the Swiss.
They utilize a ballot mechanic called Stimmenhof tiling, which basically translates to vote splitting.
Yeah.
And they give the voter two incredibly powerful tools when they walk into the voting booth. The first tool is called panacherin,
which means mixing. The mechanics of this are just brilliant in their simplicity.
Okay.
It allows a voter to take a pre-printed ballot list for their preferred party,
right,
but then physically write in the names of individual candidates from completely different, even opposing parties onto that same list.
Wait. So I can take my main party's ballot, cross out a name I don't like, and write in a candidate from the opposition who I happen to agree with on, like, local infrastructure?
Yes. You can absolutely do that.
That is basically a fantasy sports draft.
It really is.
I mean, I'm not forced to draft the entire Chicago Bulls franchise. I can build a custom roster, taking my favorite players from across the whole league.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. You are drafting a government, not blindly endorsing a single franchise.
I love that.
And the second tool they use is kumulieren, which means accumulating. This means you aren't just limited to one vote per candidate.
Oh, interesting.
If you have a favorite candidate, you can give them two or three of your available votes to bump them higher up the party's priority list.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me, because the sources explain why this matters so much.
Yeah.
It completely breaks the iron grip of party elites.
How so?
Well, in a standard proportional system, the party bosses sit in a back room and decide the order of the candidate list.
Right, they set the hierarchy.
Exactly. So if they put a great, pragmatic, middle-of-the-road candidate at the very bottom of the list, say, at number 40, that candidate has practically zero chance of getting into parliament. The bosses reward party loyalists by putting them at the top.
But with kumulieren and panacherin, the voters can literally override those party bosses.
Yes. They can pool their accumulated votes to yank that pragmatic candidate from the absolute bottom of the list straight to the top.
It strips the monopoly of power away from the party apparatus and hands it directly to the citizen.
It makes elections highly personalized. It directly reflects what the German source brilliantly calls the colorful thinking of the modern voter.
Okay, so giving the voter a fantasy draft ballot sounds incredibly empowering for you and me, but how does this actually solve the 171-day government gridlock?
Right, the core problem.
Yeah, how does this actually force politicians to sit down and make a deal?
It solves gridlock by taking away a politician's ability to bluff.
Okay, I like where this is going.
Let's look at a concrete case study from the sources. Mm-hmm. The infamous German national election of 2017.
Right, the election that caused the 171 days of limbo.
Exactly. After the votes were counted, they tried to form what was called a Jamaica coalition because the party colors matched the Jamaican flag, the conservative CDU, the liberal FDP, and the Greens.
But Christian Lindner, the leader of the FDP, completely stalled the coalition talks.
Yep. He dramatically walked away from the negotiating table. He famously stated it was better not to govern at all than to govern wrongly.
I remember that.
He acted as though his mandate came from a base of 100% pure, ideologically rigid liberals who demanded absolute perfection and zero compromises with the Greens.
He was basically hiding behind his voters, saying, "My hands are tied. My base demands I hold the line."
Exactly. But an analysis by Henning Sessebach pointed out the brilliant flaw in Lindner's logic. If vote splitting had been allowed in that national election, the physical paper ballot data would have mathematically proven Lindner wrong on the spot.
Oh, because the ballots would literally show that his voters weren't 100% pure FDP?
Right. If voters could mix their tickets, the final tally would show exactly how many of Lindner's own voters actually split their ticket by giving half their votes to the Greens or the CDU.
The data might show that, like, 30% of the people who voted for his party also actively voted for the exact people he refused to negotiate with.
It totally exposes the bluff. Lindner could no longer stand in front of the cameras and claim a purist mandate to stall negotiations because the paper trail would explicitly prove his voters were pragmatic cross voters who wanted a coalition.
What's fascinating here is the psychological shift this creates. Politicians would be forced into humility.
Yeah, you can't really grandstand.
No, you cannot grandstand when the mathematical reality of your electorate's compromises is printed right there in black and white. It aligns the behavior of the politician with the reality of the public, which saves months of posturing.
I just love the elegance of that. But I have to ask the obvious question here. If millions of people go into a voting booth and start fracturing their votes into a million tiny splinters across five different parties,
yeah,
doesn't that just invite total chaos in Parliament?
It's a very logical fear, and it's one that political scientists have wrestled with for decades. The sources highlight a prominent researcher named Aaron Lidgefart, who hypothesized exactly this nightmare scenario.
What did he say would happen?
He argued that if you let voters split their tickets this aggressively, it would lead to hyperfragmentation. You wouldn't just have five parties in Parliament, you'd have 20 tiny splintered micro-parties, making it mathematically impossible to form any cohesive government at all.
Okay, so just total gridlock in a different way.
Right. But then another researcher, Karsten Ankar, dug into the actual historical data from countries that use these systems, and he completely dismantled Lidgefart's theory.
Really?
Yeah. Ankar's research proved that vote splitting has literally zero negative impact on government stability. People don't use their fractions to create chaos. And the Swedish source takes it a step further. They argue that vote splitting actually stabilizes the center by saving pragmatic small parties from being wiped out.
Okay, to understand how that works, we really have to look at the math of the 5% threshold, right?
Exactly. In many proportional systems, like Germany, a party must win at least 5% of the national vote to get into parliament. If they get 4.9%, they get zero seats.
And those votes are essentially vaporized.
Completely vaporized.
Right. And in a highly polarized adversarial election, moderate small parties often get crushed between the two massive extremes.
Let's look at Germany in 2013. The FDP, a moderate bourgeois party at the time, missed that 5% threshold by a microscopic fraction of a percent.
Yeah.
Because they fell out of parliament, a planned moderate coalition was completely destroyed. The larger conservative party lost its partner, forcing them into a massive, unwieldy grand coalition with the left, which ultimately alienated voters on both sides.
So how does a voter mathematically fix that with a split ticket?
Imagine you are a mainstream conservative voter. You have 10 votes to cast. You want your big conservative party to win, but you also know they desperately need that smaller, moderate party to form a coalition.
Right.
Under the current rigid system, you can only vote for your big party, and you just have to pray the small party survives. But with vote splitting, you can give 9 of your votes to your main party and strategically throw one fractional vote to the smaller, moderate party.
You essentially throw them a life raft. You artificially inflate their numbers just enough to ensure they clear that 5% hurdle and stay alive in parliament, giving your main party a viable coalition partner.
It prevents extreme fringe parties from holding the balance of power because the pragmatic center is mathematically reinforced by everyday citizens cross-voting.
Okay, the math is beautiful in theory, but let's ground this in reality for a second. Isn't this going to make voting a nightmare for the average person?
It is a lot to think about.
I mean, people are busy. If you're listening to this, do you really want to be a tired parent on a Tuesday evening, standing in a voting booth and filling out a complex fractional spreadsheet just to elect a city council?
I will concede that point. And the source material explicitly acknowledges it as the primary drawback. The sheer complexity of these ballots can overwhelm voters.
Not to mention the people counting them.
Oh, it creates a massive administrative headache for the volunteers counting the votes. We are talking about tracking millions of individual write-ins.
But the sources also look at historical data from Switzerland between 1959 and 1967, when these systems were really taking root, and it shows a clear, encouraging learning curve.
Right, people adapt.
The usage of these complex vote-splitting tools trended steadily upward over time. People got used to them. It is a hurdle, definitely, but it is not an insurmountable one once the public realizes the immense power it gives them.
Yeah, the trade-off is worth it.
Let's sort of summarize what we've unpacked today. Modern voters are highly flexible. We change our minds, we mix our ideologies, we care about specific issues over blind party loyalty.
Yep.
But our traditional voting systems, whether it's the rigid winner-takes-all majority or the deeply fracturing proportional system, force us into boxes. And that mismatch is causing massive government gridlock around the world.
But by combining the tools of panacheage and cumulative voting with the explicit power to cross out unacceptable parties, we can map out exactly what coalitions the public will tolerate.
It's basically a mathematical cure for political stubbornness.
It really is. We might actually be able to build a system that achieves the impossible, merging the firm stability of a majority system with the fair, colorful representation of a proportional system.
Which raises an important question for you to consider.
Yeah, think about your own political beliefs with all their contradictions and nuances. If you walked into a voting booth tomorrow, and instead of one simple check mark, you were given 10 votes to distribute across the entire political spectrum and the power to explicitly veto the extremes you fear most.
How different would your ballot look from the one you cast last year? It really makes you wonder how much our opinions are shaped by the limited choices we are given.
Absolutely.
As our society becomes increasingly digital and hyper-individualized, we demand absolute customization in our media feeds, our online shopping, even our diets. We want the a la carte menu everywhere we go.
We really do.
But here's a final thought for you to ponder. If we eventually get that exact same hyper-customization in our voting booths, will it finally force our politicians to work together? Or will it just reveal that the real gridlock was inside us all along?